Today is October 29th, Season 2, Episode 38, Decky Party Planner. The boys from the back pocket are back. How we doing today?
We are great. We threw a party, but you know what? We're recording before the party even happened. And at the back end of this episode, we will be detailing how we convinced every single person to show up at this party for the grand old Halloween ball. It was an absolute blast. But before we get to any of that, obviously, Josh Letty, Life's a Beach. What a freaking time we had with him. We're going to get to that right away. Andrew, brief background.
Josh Letty was my boss this summer at Life's a Beach, and he also has Back Channel Brewery. The man is a true Minnesotan. I loved his story. I loved his passion. Very simple man, but very passionate about what he does. Intro music, it's your time to shine. Doing it live. Welcome, Josh Letty, to the Back Pocket Podcast.
I feel welcomed.
Good.
Nice. Yeah.
Good.
I'm ready to go.
So, you're Andrew's boss.
I am.
We need to talk about that, but I've known you for about 10 minutes.
About 10 minutes,
and
yeah.
It's been a blast so far, man. You're a great guy.
Can Wild really ride.
Tell. Mm-hmm. The energy, man, that you're bringing, it's phenomenal. So, before we get into it, I just want to have you give us a little background of who is Josh Letty.
Wow. I am an enigma. No, I'm really not an enigma. I am a simple dude. I like to work really hard for things that I am really passionate about. And that's really me to a T. I have not really worked for anybody my entire life, other than like just working as an individual as a part of a team to try to make great things happen. I really think that's what it's all about.
You don't think you've ever had a job growing up with a boss?
I'm gonna say no.
Sweet.
Yeah,
it's been pretty sweet.
I lucked out. I mean, I may have had like one job where I had a boss, but like yeah. He really wasn't a boss.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of did my thing, and you know.
Okay.
But for the most part, yeah. Operated on what I really want to do, and you know, kind of set the bar for myself.
Okay, and those things are Back Channel Brewery and Life's a Beach. And I said those out of order. Life's a Beach came in 2004, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then Back Channel Brewery in 2017 is fairly recent, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, sweet. So let's detail that a little bit. Life's a Beach first. Let's hear about it.
Life's a Beach, you know. So I grew up on a small lake in Plymouth, Minnesota, which is about 15, 20 minutes west of downtown Minneapolis. And grew up on this lake, and I had everybody has their regular chores. You know, you got mowing the lawn, picking weeds in the garden, doing the dishes, things like that. Well, my chores were, you need to make that beach clean. You gotta get those weeds. I was like, all right, I'll figure this out. And then it kind of came to be when I was getting into middle school, high school, that turns out, you know, girls didn't really want to hang out on a beach with weeds or in the water with weeds. So had to go and take care of that for them. So just kind of came into removing lake weeds so that people could enjoy swimming in the lake and enjoy hanging out on the beach without dealing with this green plant material.
And you know? Did you have siblings, or were you going out there like this was your role? You're going out there solo every now and then cleaning the beach.
You know, I did have siblings. I've got older siblings. I got four older brothers and an older sister. They're older enough than me where I was almost an only child. So that was my thing, you know. I just got in the zone, pulled some weeds, hung out, had a good time, went and played.
Yeah, you know, right on.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good childhood.
Love that.
Yes.
And yeah, you can tell that it helped you establish where you wanted to take your kind of like entrepreneurial passion into a revenue building kind of stream. So you're young, you're out there in your backyard picking weeds. And it's milfoil, correct? Like is probably the stuff that was most noticeable right away that kind of was like, this needs to go.
Predominantly was Eurasian milfoil. So you got an invasive plant that just basically grows by the hour is the old adage, is that you could just sit and watch this thing grow. Jeez. Just like you can watch paint dry. And, it just kind of opened up an avenue for me to do something that could not only help myself and help my parents, but help neighbors create nice little swimming areas where you can jump in and not have to get grappled by all these green little weeds that are coming up and trying to get you.
Mm-hmm. So you leave Plymouth about 30 minutes east and head to the U of M for 4 years.
So yes, that is correct. Okay. After high school, I started this business and I was going to go play hockey.
So right after high school.
Yeah. So actually I graduated in 2002. So it's a little bit beyond 2004 is when Life's the Beach truly started.
Okay.
Started playing hockey up in Canada and tore my ACL on my left knee for, you know, it was brutal.
Mm.
Tore for the first time. And then spawned this idea that, hey, I do not want to work inside. I want to do something outside. And I want to work with my friends. I want to work as a team. And that's where Life's the Beach kind of came into play. We're like, hey, you know, my parents want this done for themselves. I would imagine that other people want this done for themselves. And it is not using chemicals. It's not using machines. It's not doing bad things in the environment. So most likely people would want to do that. So started doing that as a grassroots effort. Came into a little situation where it worked out. And here we are pulling weeds.
And what was those original steps of gathering maybe a team or maybe a process to do this efficiently? Because now it's not just you out there by yourself picking the weeds in your backyard or your neighbor's backyard. It's expanded now. So what'd that look in a business sense?
You know, I think it's important to start just talking about these types of things. You know, sometimes things that you think you want to do just sound like regular little things, but, you know, that might come as a service to someone. So if you start saying, hey, I got this idea, I like doing this, you know, and you start telling people about it, like, well, gosh, I know somebody that likes to do that too, or I know somebody that needs that. So if you start talking about it a little bit, then all of a sudden it comes into this idea where now you're just talking about something that not only is something to do, but it's also something to generate some revenue. It's also something to make somebody feel happy in a sense that you're completing a task for them. So that's kind of where it just spawned from, is just more or less talking about doing something, you know?
I love that, like taking the first step. And I think one of the things that's kind of crazy, oh, it's a time lapse, Andrew. One of the things that you're making just sound awesome and super easy is just doing it and not really caring about the outcome and not really knowing the outcome, right? When you started Life's a Beach, you did not know it would grow into what it is now, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we came up with the name Life's a Beach.
I mean, which is a great name.
Yeah, it's just more or less just kind of saying like, hey, we're doing this. You don't want to. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it can be a pain in the butt. But all in all, like, it's something that needs to be done.
Right. And my point from that is you built the confidence to build it without really knowing the result. So was it as simple as just talking to people about it and really manifesting it in your head to build that confidence? Or was there an external force that was giving you that confidence?
You know, there really was. There was an external thought process in it all, because when I got involved with communicating with lake homeowners about taking care of their shorelines, I started picturing, you know, the ultimate shorelines and where I wanted to really work. And that's what brought me over to Lake Minnetonka. I thought to myself, gosh, I really love where I grew up and where I live, but as far as where I really want to be, like, there's this lake 20 minutes to the west of where I'm at that is just has everything. So I want to go over there and explore that. So we went over there, explored that, and just started talking to people about lake weed removal.
And me being kind of unfamiliar with how or when you started, was there competition? Was there something like a blueprint to follow? Or are you the pioneer of lake weed removal by kind of this trade at Lake Minnetonka?
You know, I think it's a good question. I want to say that we are a pioneer for what we are doing. There is another company out there that was doing similar activities in the water, but it was a little bit different, and it was way more costly, more to the effect where I felt like this company was profiling the area based on their potential economic income.
Mm-hmm.
Just to do things, whereas we saw a problem and we addressed the problem and we evaluated the problem as is, not based on who the problem was coming from. And I think that when we got into it, there was us and there was another company, and we had two different ideas, but then we both saw what was going on and we kind of geared towards the same goal, yet we were still a little bit different. Mm-hmm. We're still a little bit more old school in a sense where you have a problem, you see a problem, you address the problem, as opposed to you see a problem, you do all these things to try to make it seem like a grander problem and then charge accordingly. You know what I mean?
Yep. Okay. And not to point fingers or anything, or to make what you're saying, I'm going to say it anyways. So those people are using scuba gear. Yep. And they're using tanks where they're submerging themselves for, I haven't done it, but I'm guessing for minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. Versus Life's a Beach is you got a pair of goggles, you got your water shoes and your water gloves and the board shorts. And you dive down there, and whether you're in 10 feet waters or you're in 2 feet waters, it's just you and the goggles and your breath. And you got to figure out how you're going to handle the situation, how you're going to move through it. And me personally, my first job might have been the hardest one. So for all the marketing interns, the listeners out there that don't know my story with Life's a Beach, this was my first summer. My older brother had worked there the summer prior. So this was his summer two and my summer one. And he's a well-established Life's a Beach employee, well-respected. He's got his own individual. Like, he can handle everything if he needs to. I go in there thinking, oh, PI crushed this. I'm going to be able, like, he's my blood. I'll be able to crush this too. I know I'm not great in the water, but I think I got this. Well, lo and behold, I jump in, and the tides were pretty strong that day. And we jump off a dock, and it was 10 feet off the front. And it was an initial. And I was ready to quit. I was so ready to quit. I pulled up the first thing and I didn't pick up many weeds, and I was like, this is a lot harder than I thought, because I couldn't hold my breath long enough to go down the 10 feet to get the root of the weed. And then I come up to the top and I'm like, all right, I got nothing, I gotta try again. I go down the second time and I come up with way too much, and I'm not near the dock to, like, and I don't have a blue mat floating around me to kind of throw all the weeds on a blue mat, so I'm treading, I'm not the best treader, and I'm like getting submerged by the weeds and then coming back up and trying to figure out what to do with these weeds. And PI is just like, Andrew, what are you, like, just get your breath. Like, all right, I'm going to show you some technique. But it was a wild ride that first time. But then you get your bearings out there. And I truly think the way that Life's a Beach does it versus the competitor, there's a lot more actual landscaping done towards the docks around it versus people going in there and treating it as, I don't know, some high and mighty, like you kind of putting it on a pedestal almost. You're a greenskeeper, you're a landscaper, gardener in the water. And that's kind of how I looked at it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're trying to do versus scuba divers is we're going down there and we're selectively removing plants to enhance the swimming experience, as opposed to going down there and removing 100% of everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lake is a lake. We're not trying to change that, right? So if you're going down there and removing 100% of the habitat, now you're taking it away from it being a lake. So, and that's kind of an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're down there, Life's a Beach style, and you're doing some weed removal, you sink down to the bottom, you feel what's going on, you grasp that, you pull it out, it is a satisfactory moment. You don't necessarily need to pull too much, because we're not trying to rip 100% of the vegetation down there, unless that is required, unless that is being asked, unless it is predominantly AIS down there, AIS being aquatic invasive species. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good time.
How about, like, when you were first starting, were you at the head, like on the front lines pulling weeds? Like, how long were you doing that for before you, like, took a step back and had other people pulling weeds for you? And before we got into the management position, I should say.
You know, the only thing that brought me into the management position, and I've been doing this for about 13 years, and the only thing that brought me into a management position is the fact that I've had some injuries that prevent me from doing laborious activities.
Really?
I mean, there is nothing better than starting your day, jumping into the lake, and pulling some weeds. It's liberating.
Love that.
It really is. It's I mean, it's almost like it just cleanses the body. you know, getting in there. So I was only able to perform some lake weed removal once this past year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was probably like 3 years ago where I had to transition out of actually doing the physical aspect of it. And it was really disappointing because I like to see immediate results. And that's another benefit about this business is that you go into an issue, a home, a task, and you take care of it in less than an hour or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
How when we arrive at a house and there's just three people going in there and you see all the way, you're like, how the hell are we, are us, these, myself and these two other guys about to take all these weeds out? Whether it's on the beach or you walk out to the dock and you have to take a swim area. You got to go to Brazil and swim out to the swim platform.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I'm incapable. And then you spend an hour and you get it done.
And it's like, when you think about it, when you break it down, the other option to remove these weeds is to spend thousands of dollars to have somebody go into a laboratory, create some chemical, treat these weeds, and then disintegrate these weeds, and then a couple weeks later they're gone. Whereas you hire us, we go in there, and the problem's solved instantly, you know?
Yeah.
So when you look at like what we're able to do with what the other options are for lake weed management, it's uplifting to the mind based on how you can enhance an aquatic lifestyle or an aquatic ecosystem.
What I love about Lives of Beach and what I'm hearing right now is like, dude, 10 years in the business you've been, and you're on the front lines and you're at the head of this company trying to acquire more customers and saying, yeah, I know how to do this. This is my job. I do it with all my other boys or girls, whoever, right? My guys back here.
Oh yeah.
Your A team. And then you're competing against these guys who are these probably bigger companies. So you're too small for the big guys and you're bigger than the small guys. You're in this like super cool niche, really golden area.
Oh yeah.
Where you can just prey on any sort of person that just wants it done. And that's your role. And really it's now your job to just maximize that. Do you agree?
No, I totally agree. Okay. And the whole challenge right now really is getting homeowners on lakes to believe that the new way of managing your lakes is the old school way. And mm-hmm. that's pulling the weeds, not going into a laboratory, paying people to create something, to treat something, and then hope that it works.
Yeah.
It's creating unnecessary steps in something that can easily be managed.
What about the thing that you like, it like rolls across the bottom of your dock? Do you know what I'm talking about?
A weed roller.
There we go. Yeah. Are those equally as beneficial, or what are those all about?
You know, weed rollers are solid, but you have to get permits for them to be able to operate, and the majority of people that could utilize a weed roller are not going to be qualified to use them because mm-hmm. of the how much muck that they have in the area.
Gotcha.
I want to say that you have to have 4 inches or less of muck, and anybody that is on a lake knows that 4 inches of muck is pretty minuscule. So they're really limiting the amount of people that could utilize a weed roller. But they really do work. They do work. I want to say that, you know, DNR requires a GPS system on that weed roller so they mm-hmm. know exactly what's going on.
Right.
But, you know, if you were to have a crew of people come down and act as a weed roller, it would still probably cost less achieve more. Just by that manpower coming in there and reworking that lake.
Love it.
Another thing that I quickly noticed about Life's a Beach was the amount of respect that Life's a Beach has on Lake Minnetonka. I don't know how many times, because I didn't have the pleasure of meeting you until probably a month and a half in when we had our first job at Back Channel and mm-hmm. we had to clean your public dock that you have boats parked at for the brewery. But how many times your name was brought up by a homeowner? Is Josh around, or is Josh on this team? Can I talk to Josh? And I didn't know who you were, but I just knew through Patrick, a kind of, you're the owner and blah blah blah. But everyone was like, I want to talk to Josh. Like, this is, they have so much respect for you and what you've brought to Lake Minnetonka, because now it's been 13 years. I mean, that's a long time, and you have an established name across a massive lake, the lake in Minnesota. One, I don't know if it's like the lake, but it's got high prestige. We're not from
Minnesota.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't rank the lakes in one from 10 to 1, but I know that it's got high prestige.
It is the most heavily recreationally used lake in the entire state of Minnesota. It could be called the lake. Yeah.
Okay. No, well, this is the back pocket podcast where you have one Chicago native, one Denver native explaining and trying to unpack the best lake in Minnesota.
Oh, called 10,000. You guys are doing a great job.
We're crushing it, dude. This is great.
But how cool is that? I mean, it's almost your lake to a sense.
It's fun to think about it in that way. And I really do want to be the gatekeeper of Lake Minnetonka. I think that we're in the land of 10,000 lakes. We have over 15,000 lakes, even though we're called the land 10,000. But I call us ground zero for any new aquatic invasive species that's going to come into our state because of the fact that we are the most recreationally used state. I mean, Grays Bay is 15 minutes from downtown Minneapolis. That is an easy jaunt for anybody come in here who's educated, who's uneducated about fishing yet wants to go fishing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that people respect kind of what I'm doing, I really appreciate that, and I want to do them a justice. You know, I don't want to do them an injustice by just sitting here and spouting off things that are not worthy, but based on the fact that I've been involved in the lake for the better part of a decade and a half, it's kind of fun to be able to continue to provide to the lake and have some people pay attention to that.
You've built a legacy for sure. And, what's funny is this episode is released sometime in November or maybe October 29th. I'll be doing my math wrong all over the place. But what a seasonal time to talk about lakes and weed removal,
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And,
Well, I had the pleasure of, finishing off the Lake Life's a Beach season this year.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different ball game from day one I arrived a month in, so I didn't have the supreme initials in April, May.
Yeah.
I was in June.
Yeah.
So the water was already warm.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to feel the burr of Lake Minnetonka until what was it? Probably middle of September when we had to do an initial, and I was like, "What? We have to do an initial?" And we brought out the attic full of swim gear, like the full body suits that we don't touch all season because you really don't need them. But now that the water's so cold, we're all running around like ninjas, like ready to jump in the water. Oh man, and the coolest thing was no one even batted an eye of like jumping in. Like, you're committed to this job, you jump in, you got the Lloyd brothers, Dan, and just getting in there. And it was so fun. And I like got out there, I was like, I cannot believe what I'm doing right now. Life's a beach.
It's just a mindset, dude.
Yep.
Not only a company, but a mindset.
Sometimes it's a bitch. Sometimes it's a beach. You hope for the beach.
That's phenomenal. All right, so let's trap it in here. Trap the puck. Average quality. This is the back pocket, World Your Wildly Average podcast. And we've put you on a pedestal, man. You are legend.
To a sense,
but you deserve it. 13,
I don't know.
13 years,
I appreciate
years,
that, but, I appreciate that.
We look at you as a legend, just as all those Minnetonka homeowners are like, where's Josh? We're like, this is Josh right here, baby.
Yeah, you damn right.
So, man, what is your average quality?
Wow, my average quality would be more or less organization. I'm really good at accomplishing things. I'm really good at, managing situations, but as far as laying out a specific plan, sticking to the plan and executing it, that's just not me.
How's the moving process going without organization?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very good point. Yes, I am going through a moving process right now, and it is quite tough because I am a very organized, disorganized person. It's kind of an oxymoron, but I know where things are at, but it's tough to just continue to follow through with those things. I had a sports psychology professor at the University of Minnesota that I really enjoyed, and he used this term, academic adrenaline junkie, and that's kind of what I feel as myself. I'm not necessarily dealing with academics right now, but if you were to call life or a task, that is academic or a task, I am adrenaline junkie. I can't just take things efficiently and take care of them. I will wait to the last minute and execute, you know, properly, mm-hmm. but I'll wait to the last minute. That's probably my average quality, is that I can't stick to a schedule.
That's too awesome, man. I mean, I just heard someone, Jordan Peterson, talk about like order and chaos and finding that balance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's kind of like exactly kind of that mindset of like the chaos is building, boom, 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 boom. I got to bring an order. Like mm-hmm. I'll let it build, but I know when I need to jump upon this chaos. I don't need to deal with it right now, but I know it's important at some point. Give it a few more days, give it a few more hours, boom, I'm going to attack it. And then you find the way to bring order to the chaos.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So that's cool. So yeah, my average quality would be the fact that I am a below average scheduler.
Love it. That's just, here's the thing though. I think Andrew's got a great point, man. You got to have that balance. And is like what is like the life of Josh? Like a day in the life? Is it just putting out fires and you're attacking everything that comes your way, like right at the beginning? Because you're obviously not like organized and knowing what's ahead of your day entirely. So you just get surprised all the time. Is that kind of how it goes?
Very good. That's a very good question. You know, honestly, I start my day the same way every single day. I'll wake up, pump like a couple of push-ups out just to get the blood flowing.
You just wake up and just start doing push-ups?
Literally get out of bed and pump some push-ups out.
Yes, yeah, dude. Yeah. Yes.
And then I get some coffee and I read the newspaper, the Star Tribune, every single day. Love it. It's what I do. And then sometimes it's a little longer. Sometimes it's not a good paper and I can just buzz through it. Mm-hmm. But then I'm set for the day. And then, yeah, it's almost like I'll put out a couple fires and then I try to have a couple tasks that I take care of. Mm-hmm. Whether that's Life's a Beach related, back channel related, or even just for my personal self, you know, I try to just hammer those out as early as possible so that, you know, the day is building on what I was able to do.
That morning routine, is that something that you kind of found maybe a family kind of like your father or your brother or something along those lines? Or is that just something that you like, this simple little thing of reading the Star Tribune is how, it's just something that you found satisfaction early on in your life and you continued it?
You know, I grew up playing sports. I achieved my ultimate goal of going to play Division I hockey at Boston University, but I tore my ACL for the third time, which prevented me from going to achieve that, or, you know, that dream. Mm-hmm. It was tough. So I went through a time period when I just kind of hung out, did my thing, had a lot of fun. And then I realized that I was not like happy with where my physical body was at. So then I decided to really start taking care of myself. And I decided that starts in the morning. And when the newspaper thing came along, I was, you know, a member at Lifetime Fitness, and I would do the pool, then I would go sit in the sauna and read the paper. And I would just more or less like drain out all my toxins, kind of focus my mind, and then just get myself on a level plane to start the day.
Right on.
Maybe pick up a few ideas from what I read in the paper that might be inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that.
Yeah, that's a great way. I mean, you bring up a good point too of like utilizing the morning routine as kind of another, I mean, I hate to use that same example, but the order and chaos. I mean, you bring your mind to a standpoint of like a breath mm-hmm. of fresh air, you're reading the paper. It's so simple. I mean, some people get it through their phone, but going back to the paper, having it tangible in your hand, flipping through it. I mean, I grew up my dad or my grandpa doing the same thing. He would watch over me when my parents were at work, and he'd read through the paper and grab me donuts on the weekends. Like, nice. That's how I started my mornings on the weekends as a kid.
That's how you started your love for donuts, man.
That's what I love donuts. I would get two donuts from that is it a Holiday right next to the True Value? I think it's a Holiday. Yeah, that we get right in the parking ride. And nice. I'd get two donuts every morning. Just that's how I'd start my day.
Yes,
that's so bananas.
That is a good day.
That's so awesome. So let's touch on back channel, man.
Back channel.
That's from what I read, it was you use like the fermented weeds or use the weeds to help ferment the beer to create back channel. Did that end up like coming to fruition, or how did it all
it
end up coming?
It is a small avenue of back channel to remain sustainable in a sense where we would utilize organics to enhance our brewery. And you know, with Life's the Beach, We are managing aquatic invasive species as well as invasive or aquatic invasive species. Mm. And the term harvesting in the world of lake weed removal means to remove weeds, whether it's mechanically, manually, or chemically. And I always, but the majority of lake weed management is done by the chemical aspect of it. And I always thought that that was kind of ridiculous that it was termed harvesting when you're pouring chemicals, you know? Mm-hmm. You're not harvesting anything of that. It's not happening. So the whole idea of that was we wanted, there's hops, there's grains, there's barley, there's ingredients that are grown locally that go into beer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to take it a step further and try to enhance what we're growing by utilizing what it's growing in our lakes, specifically aquatic invasive species, because they are taking over space, they're taking over you know, the ecosystem for our normal aquatic life to thrive in, whether it be fish or plants. So we wanted to pull that out, utilize it as nutrient-rich content to turn it into nutrient-rich compost, which would in turn enhance the soil, which would in turn produce delicious hops, wheat, barley, anything that you might want to put into beer.
I didn't know that. Okay, so mm-hmm. And that's kind of the stage in the process of it. Why not?
Yeah, so it's like, it's all cyclical. So you go and you jump in the lake, you pee. You go out, you drink your beer, you come back in the lake, you pee. I'm just kidding about the whole like peeing aspect of it. Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of like, it's cyclical in a sense where you go, you're pulling weeds out of the lake, you turn it into compost, you grow that ingredient, you put that ingredient in a beer, you drink that beer, you pee that back in the lake, and all of a sudden you're growing it again. See what I'm saying?
Dude, I love it.
Yeah.
For the simple guys out there, absolutely.
That's the process.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, I apologize awesome. That I didn't start that as eloquently as I wanted to initially.
No, but, you know, you came full circle, man. And it is a circle. And I love that. Where did you find the passion
to start? Why a brewery?
Yeah, why a brewery?
Hmm.
Because
I, sure. It was probably about 7 years ago. You know, I was coaching high school hockey at Orono with a good friend of mine who was in. Named Aaron Johnson, who was the head coach at Orono at the time. He's the head coach at Buffalo boys hockey team right now. And, you know, I love hockey. I mean, that's what I grew up doing. And for the longest time, I thought that that was going to be my true passion. I went to school at the U of M, or I went to school at a few different places, ended up at the U of M for sport management. And my goal was to become the youngest general manager of the NHL. I wanted to run an NHL team. But lake weeds were too much in my life for me.
Too enticing.
I really was. It really was. So I was going to school at the U. I just really liked the physical aspect of Life's a Beach. I loved when summer came around and I was going to be in the best shape of my life because I was out there physically removing weeds, talking to people. I was getting a workout, I was getting a tan, I was earning money, and I was building relationships. I mean, there was nothing better than Life's Beach, you know, that was just the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the connections that I had in hockey, it was fantastic. I mean, I was able to build on those. I was able to run a hockey league for 11 years called the XL Hockey League, and that was my goal. I wanted to use that as an avenue to get into hockey, but Life's a Beach was just kind of too much. Hockey began to fade a little bit, and I decided that I wanted to really find something that was a true passion in my life. And beer became that passion roughly 7 years ago, right around the time that the beer boom was coming around in Minnesota. There was a lot of breweries popping up. Surly just had the Surly Law past where you're able to produce beer on site as well as have a tap room. And when that was going on, all these breweries were popping up, and you know, I was naive to what beer was 7 years ago. So I started tasting all these different beers, and my mind began to expand as far as the beer world was concerned. my wife and I traveled to many breweries around the state. We realized that, okay, this is pretty cool. Let's go to all these beer cities throughout the country that are supposed to be so great. And we started going to all these beer cities throughout the country. Asheville, North Carolina, Denver, Colorado, Seattle, San Diego, Bend, Oregon, Portland. And that's when it really clicked to the point where beer was not a hobby anymore. Beer was the next route. That's what we wanted to pursue.
Nice.
So it was pretty cool to realize, or it was pretty cool to find a new love after hockey, especially since like I'd spent my whole life pursuing a goal, achieving goal, said goal, mm-hmm. and then not necessarily being able to realize it. So being able to being able to play Division I hockey and, mm-hmm. and pursuing that. I have a nephew that plays for the New York Islanders. I joke that I took all the injuries so that he could go through unscathed and become a professional hockey player. But with that, I was given the route of brewing and the route of beer. And, you know, I don't want to say that I'm more passionate about it than I was hockey, but it's pretty awesome right now, and I'm really excited with where we're at.
So, I didn't necessarily do my research enough, I think, because, okay, so this XL Hockey League, you had coexisting with Life's a Beach, and that start date was pretty similar to the round Life's a Beach started?
The XL Hockey League probably started in 2003 by a gentleman named Dave Jensen. He was my brother's high school hockey defenseman, but Dave was also the captain of the 84 Gopher hockey team, played on the USA Olympic team for 1984, played for the Gophers, played for the North Stars, mm-hmm. and just kind of created this avenue. So I was like, I'm going to utilize this connection and get into hockey and do what I can.
And your brother's much older than you.
Yes, I have older brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. my oldest brother, the brother that I'm talking about, is 24 years older than myself
now. Holy smokes. Whoa.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. He's 58.
Yeah, because you're talking about your brother's, you said his defenseman? Is that?
Yeah, yeah, his defensive partner.
All of these accomplishments, I was like, holy smokes. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're roughly in your 30s.
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. this is kind of crazy. Dude, but yeah. Okay, so he's 58, and he started the XL Hockey League and then in 2003, and he brought you on in those starting periods?
I reached out to my brother. Okay. It was after my second ACL surgery, where I was about to go to Boston, but then I wasn't able to play because I had torn my ACL so late in the season that there was just no chance to recover over summertime and get back into it. And I reached out to my brother. I was like, hey, I need something to do. Like, I can't play hockey anymore. And he's like, hey, call Dave. And Dave hooked it up, and yeah, I'm still good friends with Dave, and we communicate all the time. And
sweet. Yeah. And then crazy. That kind of faded out, your role in management?
You know, last year was the first year that the XL Hockey League did not exist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was because of the brewery, because I did not have enough time and or energy to continue to try to pursue this. The XL Hockey League is a great thing, but it wasn't necessarily supported by Minnesota Hockey, which is the governing body of Minnesota Hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate they didn't see it as a beneficial thing to youth athletes, because it was more or less geared towards kids that grew up playing hockey as well as other sports, but then they stopped playing hockey because they excelled in that other sport.
Right.
So it was a league predominantly for high school kids that excelled in lacrosse, baseball, football, basketball, you name it.
Right.
Okay. But still want to get on the ice.
Yeah.
Right on.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk about too was you mentioned like this moment where you're like, okay, I realized that I couldn't achieve my dream playing D1 hockey. I couldn't achieve my dream playing or being a manager, the youngest manager of hockey. And then you ended up going into back channel and finding a passion there.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people out there right now that, you know, for whatever expectation they had, it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality. And it happens all the time. Or they achieved it and now it's gone, right? They tear their ACL. They get too old. They, you know, there's a million other things.
They start a family,
you know, mm-hmm. life.
Life's a beach.
Nice.
And so I guess I wanted to tap in and just figure out, like, dive into the mindset of Josh at that time where it's like, man, you finally realize you've come to the end. And now looking back at it, you got this sweet passion, but like, what was your mind back then?
Wow. Yeah, no, that's a great question. It was rough. It was definitely a rough time frame to pursue, you know, to spend so much time pursuing this goal and then not necessarily realizing it. You know, it's a reality check. And you just need to support your new decision within yourself to be able to do it, and to be able to just say, hey, like, you know, my perception of this is that I'm now moving on to something greater. It's not that I was not able to accomplish something, right? You're just more or less moving on if you're able to tell yourself that that's what's going on, then you're good to go. I mean, perception is a huge thing. Whatever happens to you, and it should be perceived by you. So the fact that I was not able to accomplish my goal as a hockey player means that I'm just going to be able to go and accomplish something else.
It opens the door for another opportunity.
Something that I may exceed greater at than what I was doing previously.
You have the ability to set your perception. That's so cool. And I mean, just bringing that note up, I mean, it's something that you hear not all the time, but enough to understand what it means, but not enough people truly grasp that. Like, you have the ability, when a situation happens to you, anything in that matter happens to you, you can handle how you perceive that.
You decide.
Yes.
Yep.
It's so hard to do, yet it's the simplicity of your control is, it's difficult, but it's what you have to offer. And Then you put into the intention aspect, like, okay, now that hockey's over, now that something in your life's over, for you it was hockey, you have to create that intention. And you started with Life's a Beach, and then it took you, and combining that with the XL Hockey League, and now you have Back Channel Brewery. I mean, this is a really cool story. I mean, I did not necessarily know your story in full, and kind of the pieces and where they fit in. And I apologize to our listeners, our marketing interns, if I'm kind of sporadic with all of these type of questions, because I just keep hearing all these really cool tidbits and I want to unpack them. So with the brewery, going back to the brewery, you started the brewery and now you're over a year in. You had the year anniversary, mm-hmm. Correct?
Okay. Correct.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. How's that going, and where do you kind of see the future of Back Channel?
It's going really, really well. We consider us, so we're a smaller brewery, right? And I like to say that we want to brew for the masses, We want the masses to know about our beer, but we don't want to brew for the masses, in a sense where we want to stay small. We want to brew for our area and just dominate what we're doing. We almost wanted to have tunnel vision, in a sense where we don't want to get too big, because when you get too big, all of a sudden now you are straying from your goals, your ideals, your identity of who you are. And people don't see you as the same when you're that big, right? Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to rein it in and really trying to grow organically to the point where we are not missing anything, not losing anything, but more or less building upon what we've created.
So you're basically building a foundation right now.
That's a good word.
More so like brick by brick, but in the sense of, you know, you really want to, you're not trying to appease to all the hipsters that like beer. You're trying to appease to the hipsters who love you, who love Back Channel and love beer.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you're trying to go out there and hit a home run with everyone, then you don't have an identity. I mean, you're just this right. chameleon that's trying to go out there and mold with any group that you're with. But if you have an identity and a mindset and a pathway of where you want to take it, mm-hmm. you just stick with that and just keep doing what you do, you know.
I love it, man. And that's stuff that we're trying to do as well, because we're that in this
grow locally type thing.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have aspirations of being, you know, the biggest podcast ever and stuff like that. And we want to reinforce and always, always, always come back to the core of two knucklehead podcasters, two wildly average guys. And it's the growth is the fun part. the growth, the process, the conversation that we get to have with no distractions.
It's hair stands up on my head when I talk about right? it. We just get to talk to you and a random, today, Wednesday?
Yeah.
And have this really cool conversation. Yeah. I absolutely love. That's what I love doing.
Oh, we're going to do it again, too.
Yes. Yeah. But it's that growth aspect. I mean, we're 22 years old, and we really don't have that total picture of what the back pocket could be. We don't really know, and we love that. We love that we can make this whatever we want it to be, whether it's our full-time position or whether it's something that we dominate from 5 to 9 instead of the 9 to 5.
I'm jealous of that.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. I love where I'm at, but I wish that I could go back to that inventive stage where you're following your passion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very admirable what you guys are doing.
Thank you. And hearing your story, I mean, that gives that reinforced inspiration from your end. I mean, it's not easy to figure it out, and you're not going to have it figured out, but there are plenty of ways to maneuver through those obstacles to figure it out. And just having that simple mindset. I mean, the thing of doing whatever, how many push-ups, getting in the morning, doing your push-ups, and reading the Star Tribune, the impact that that has on an individual, whether it's that or something else to start a day, is incredible. That's something that you start in consistency, and then boom, you attack your day. Those simple things play off into, okay, now Life's a Beach needs to do these simple things. Back Channel needs to do these simple things. It all is incorporated into every endeavor. I mean, and that's something that we are trying to figure out, what are our small consistencies that we need to embody. And I'm not going to say we have the answers. Like we always say, we're two wildly average guys moving through the podcast industry, and we love that we're in the ability to maneuver through it. And sorry for that little rant. I'm totally inspired and fired up right now through this conversation.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
I got a question. You mentioned like you miss being in the inventive stage, kind of what we're in, I guess. What would you, what kind of advice do you have to a couple guys like us and our interns, our marketing interns, our listeners who are in a similar stage?
Wow, that's a good one. Gosh, close your eyes and like see what you see yourself doing and just do it. You know, like you have the power to wake up and control your own day. There's always going to be a few hours that you got to take care of some shit, you know, but depending on if you wake up early or stay up a little later, you can accomplish like what you're needing to accomplish. And it's just like, close your eyes, see where you see yourself at, and then be there.
Thank you.
We got to rock through that a little bit, you know.
Yeah, no.
What do I want to do, man?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that takes some time, though, right?
It is going to take time. I'm 34 years old, you know, and I like just got into the groove of doing what I'm doing now for the rest of my life, which is beer.
Mm-hmm. And taking
and weeds.
And weeds. Yes, absolutely, man. And again, taking you back a little bit to the hockey days. What were some of those things that you, that competitive, because everyone needs one, if you're a college athlete or an athlete nonetheless, you're always going to have that inner competition kind of pushing you in some maneuver, in some way. And how are you able to capture and harness that competition, that passion to compete in an industry now?
Yeah, I'm super grateful that I grew up playing sports, first and foremost. That is what gave me the drive to compete. And every day I'm more or less competing with my previous self in a sense where I need to learn a little bit more. Like that's what I'm competing with right now. Back in the day, it used to be a challenge because I was trying to dominate, you know, physically, like being the most healthy person I could be, being the most accomplished person I could be. And now that I'm a little bit more settled in my every single day life, I'm comfortable with all of those things, but I just like to shoot. I just lost my train of thought. What was your question again?
The competition aspect, of a student athlete, being able to now take that and, you know, your actual athletic performance has now come to a close. How are you able to put that into a work setting?
Yeah, no, I'm in the brewery world, but I look at the brewery world the same as I look at the sports world. I'm competing. I am not here to be complacent. Whenever we achieve something good, we're trying to achieve something greater the next day. And it's that competitive aspect of it where you're constantly moving forward that really helps out. You mm-hmm. need that. You need it.
A success is just another opportunity to work.
No doubt.
Simple as yeah, that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
build mm-hmm. on it. Build absolutely. On it.
And that's kind of what we had Coach Caruso on our podcast, I think episode 29 of season 2.
Nice. Yeah, so we played St. Thomas football for 4 years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And it's funny, when we started this podcast, like, we really just embodied everything that we learned on the field. We didn't really realize it at the time, but that's what it ended up being, man. You were not experienced by any means, and you weren't experienced in the brewery world a year ago.
Correct.
And you just had a passion for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure it out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do it, to figure it out, is by literally doing it.
Yeah.
And having the confidence, again, going back to that, of just the next step, taking it small increments at a time, building that equity, building that self-confidence, and just attacking, man. It's fun to talk about. I love just like unpacking that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And every individual. Do you have any particular questions?
Back pocket.
Yes.
What's in your back pocket, man? Did we give you the framework? It's basically when you are in like a stressful situation, whether you're anxious, whether it's a high stress, high pressure situation, what do you like rely on in terms of like a mental attribute that is going to get you through that moment?
You know, in all honesty, I just take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of, you know, mundane, but I operate really well in high stressful situations. And if you can kind of just sit there and be and absorb it, like, that's huge. Giving an initial reaction right away for something can be negative, whether it's a positive reaction or a negative reaction. It still might not be your true reaction. So if you can sit there and absorb something for 3 seconds, that's a huge thing. And for me, no matter what type of situation is going to happen, whether I'm about to get attacked or whatever, I can still kind of assess that situation for a few seconds before really getting involved.
Love that. Is there a moment, or was there a time where, like, would you share a story of like when you really had to take that deep breath?
Oh man, I wish I would have prepared for that one. I would have a good story.
Well, maybe I'll give you time to think about it, and I'll sidetrack here. I had something for you, or I had something that I was going to talk about. Give yourself a second. We can always, you know, weave it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is a fun question, because taking a deep breath and assessing yourself in a situation, I mean, that's kind of what we're doing right here. You have a question asked, and it's kind of like, all right, I really feel like I want to totally
dominate
this question, utilize this question, because this is something that I have plenty of examples, but I want to tap into my Josh Letty
psyche,
the hard drive that, you know, is stored in your closet. You don't have it on you all the time because there was just so many of those. And this is a situation. It could have been the first time you tore your ACL, or it could have been something like, oh my gosh, life's a beach, is in, I'm in over my head now. I didn't know I had to buy this many trucks and wheelbarrows.
Or you just come up from the water physically, and you got way too much weed in your hand. Andrew and Sarah style, where you literally don't know how to tread water. It's your first day. Like, you're not naturally buoyant. And then your brother just tells you, hey, man, take a deep breath. This is how you do it.
That's good. That's good.
There you go.
That's good.
Yeah. There you go.
As I talk about this, I'm going to try to think of a comical one.
Okay. All right. Right on.
But, you know, I've had many injuries, and I'll have many situations where I will tweak my body, and I'll be in just this horrible mind state, but I know that I'm gonna take care of myself later on, and I'll be all right.
Okay.
That's not a good example.
Is this when you're like older though? Like, this is like, oh, this, man. Is when no, this
think
happens
about,
after
think
you?
About a hockey player.
I'm like a different breed. I've had 3 ACL surgeries. I've broken my back. I've torn my labrum, my hip, partially torn hip abductor muscles. Yeah, multiple herniated discs. all of this.
Is this mainly through hockey?
All through hockey.
All through hockey.
Transition a little bit to Life's a Beach because I was just...
I was just gung-ho,
right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I just wanted to take care of some shit.
Holy smokes.
So you were like, man, then you were in Life's a Beach for 10 years and, like, you suddenly were like, yeah, I had to step away, because of these injuries. I'm like, oh, that's okay. I didn't contextualize it quite like that.
I had a doctor tell me that I was never going to be able to do any physical activity or get on the ice in my entire life. Oh. And that was 8 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And I said, no, that's bullshit. And then I went and I saw my nephew's agent, who is Neil Sheehy. And you can actually start looking at articles about him. He's basically like a modern day shaman. And he's dealing with Zach Parise and Ryan Suter right now and doing this neuromuscular therapy shit that is just game changing. I mean, I've had crippling nerve pain to the point where I can't flush a toilet or touch my foot. And then all of a sudden I do jumping jacks and all this type of stuff. So it's like, so when I through go back treatment? To, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Through basic shit. I don't take Advil. I don't take any sort of pain pills. I don't do anything. And I have herniated discs, all this other shit going on. And I just like to be in tune, like, with my body.
Oh. This is, dude, again.
We're opening another box.
Yeah, oh, we are. Let's go down, dude. I need to hear
it's
more.
The wormhole.
Yes.
We need to be in this wormhole right now.
Okay, so health and wellness, treating your body. Your body went through the ringer, clearly. A tornado effect.
Yep.
And now this Nick Letty's agent,
yep.
He kind of brought you into this. Was there anything prior to that kind of gave you like a light at the end of the tunnel, like I can save my body, or was this kind of like
nine years ago, I had a doctor tell me that I'm never going to be able to play sports again. I had a epidural in my spine, which is a giant needle into your spine to inject cortisone, which would help relieve pain. And all they were doing was hitting nerves. It was the worst experience of my entire life. So this thing to try to, like, relieve pain caused more pain. And they told me I'm never going to be able to do anything ever in my entire life. When I saw my nephew's agent, he put tape on my ankle, and I was pain-free.
What?
And then beyond that, he does these weird adjustments in the roof of my mouth and around my brain, for my, like, brain tissue, basically, like, removing previous concussions. And just writing my brain. You can go in there with the worst limp ever, and you're good to go. You got to go. I'll show you guys this article.
Yeah, no, this is...
I am shook.
I will introduce you to this guy, too.
Yeah, please. Let's get this man on the podcast.
I've had some lingering...
He's got an economic degree from Harvard. He's got a law degree from William Mitchell. And he's got a neuromuscular therapy thing going on. And he played in the NHL forever.
Okay.
And yeah.
Local guy?
He's from Thief River Falls.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, sweet. This is even better. So neuromuscular therapy is what you are doing, to put it in something that I can go research, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, my bread and butter for a day for me is to make sure that my brain and my muscles are communicating properly so that I can operate properly.
Mm.
As weird as that sounds.
Dang, dude.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest, you have this really nice routine. And I think we could be a part of it. Star Tribune, it's great.
Yeah.
I love the Star Tribune. It used to be, one used to be the Star, one used to be the Tribune. Now there's the Star Tribune.
Strib.
let me pitch you on something else here. If you were to go do some push-ups, go make some breakfast, keep your new normal routine as normal as you possibly can. But just maybe go on yourbackpockets.com and read a blog or listen to one of our podcasts. We got 89 of them.
Yes.
I think you would enjoy that, man.
I'm going to enjoy the shit out of that.
All right.
And while you're at it, maybe leave us a subscription and a 5-star review. And that goes along with all of our marketing interns.
Can I do a 10-star review?
Yeah, you could. You absolutely can in the comments section below.
Oh, yeah.
Because this right now is a 10-star review with Josh Letty. And that's where you got to set those expectations, because that actually brings me to my next point, which is a great transition, is you should have like a side company that rates shores Like, you were talking about, like, dude, the best shore, the best shore ever is, like, you guys got to go hang out at Fletcher's. You got to go hang out at Fletcher's, dude. Their shore is dope, right? But you got to have, like, a rating system of this so people know, like, where's the best place to have a beer on the shoreline. And then you can leverage that for when there are ones that get bad star reviews. You go, Life's a Beach goes to these people and be like, yo, dude, shore rating has you down right now. You guys are at like a 2.5. I want to get you to a 5.
I'm on the Lake Minnetonka Association Board of Directors, and my next goal will be to determine a shoreline class level.
Yes.
That determines if you have a good place to jump in and swim.
Or not. Yes.
Yeah. I like I've been wanting to do that for a while, and I'm going to make it happen now.
That's like that's pretty much a very more professional
version. Oh, yeah, a $750,000 house. This is beautiful, but you got a D for a shoreline. I don't want that crap, right?
Yeah. Like, oh, get involved in real estate and really see how it takes
muscles over there. Like, oh, I don't need that.
Yeah, no, we got to get those all
out. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's phenomenal, man. Yeah, but I love it. Yeah, I like it, man. And I think it's that mindset.
I'll hook you up. I'll give you a little residual.
Okay. Yeah.
Very nice.
Put the back pocket stamp on the side.
Yeah. CC that up. But I think it's that mindset, though, going back to it. Like, if you want to, it's all about quality. So, like, in my opinion, it's all about quality.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah. And your Life's a Beach, when you go and clean up a lake, it's, I want that person to feel like they got the freaking best shoreline in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Their 10-star review of what Life's a Beach is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that Airbnb thing where the creator was like, all right, if I want someone to have this 5-star review, what would that look like? Well, they open the door, they greet their person, their housemate or whoever, they walk them in the door, blah, blah, blah. And then he like worked up to what a 10-star would be. And it was like Bill Gates picks you up from the airport, the Rolling Stones are in the back, you guys go to the moon, come back down, and that's your trip.
Yeah.
Right. But then he worked his way back.
But it's got to be something in that order to make, oh, that's a 10-star type of thing.
To make the 5-star the par on a par 4. You know, like an easy par 4, you get the par, right?
Yeah.
The easy and achievable, I guess, is where I'm really going.
Because the expectation should get a 5-star.
Yes.
It shouldn't be, an average is a 3-star type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're getting a 5-star, you're checking all the boxes.
Exactly.
Type of example. And exactly. Because all those boxes are grand.
Oh, the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what you're getting at? Okay. I was walking myself through what you were talking
about.
Yeah,
no. I was unpacking it. You were unpacking it. Josh is just soaking this in.
Yeah, yeah.
Being a sponge.
And I think that's plenty of us talking. And I want to put the ball in your court. So we've asked you plenty of questions through this hour that we've already spent together. Are there any questions you have for us at this point?
Did I miss something about the back pocket thing? Did I include all the information? Did you get everything out of me that you needed?
Yeah. I mean,
For now.
So we'll bring it back.
Let me ask you guys, like, what is your goal from the back pocket?
Andrew, you go, man.
So, going back to the point of what you're doing with the brewery right now is kind of where we see and what we're thriving in a standpoint of growing locally. And we're talking to one guest and saying, hey, what are a couple other guests that you feel like would love to come on the show? And then they lead us into those guests. And now we are building ourselves to be like this really cool collaboration network that we have the ability to bring value to an audience, to an individual, to a brand. And I think that's really cool. And I love that we have the ability to do that in the Twin Cities right now, because we're two guys that didn't know what the Twin Cities were all about until 4 years ago when we came up to University of St. Thomas to play some ball. And now we've been here for 5 years or just under 5 years. And I love it here. I love it here. And I'm meeting so many people now through this podcast. So the ability to talk to these individuals for an hour, 30 minutes, whatever it ended up may be, and having that, and then finding the way that money comes in. That's the next step, right? That's the most difficult part, because if you want this to be a 5-to-9 or a 9-to-5, you can't just make it a hobby. Mm-hmm. It's got to have some type of inflow.
Mm-hmm.
So when that comes in, if that's sponsorships or if that's something other lines of us promoting this company, I'm not sure how to take that yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're working through with other people right now. We're talking our way through it, but right now we're just enjoying speaking in the mic with Josh Letty.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the best part is like, yeah, there needs to be an essence of scalability, right? You know, we're not gonna be 60 years old and living in a house in Uptown and really just promoting the hell out of everyone in the Twin Cities, right? Like, yeah, there needs to be a scalability, a model that we can follow. But it's the model that's the biggest question, right? It's, okay, we love having conversations. We love producing and building that context for our audience. And we love getting new people. How does that fit all into a box and you can show to someone and say, hey, this is our podcast. Are you interested? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where we're heading. And that's how we're trying to grow. And that's a big, what I'm explaining is like, it seems like Mount Everest right now, right? But it's one step at a time to get to the top.
Totally.
That's
totally
where we're at, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys are making headway.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And this brings us to our final question. A simple question, yet some people kind of overlook it. It's a learning question. It's simple. What did you learn from the time that you woke up to when we're having this conversation right now?
Hmm. What did I learn? Wow. That's a good one. You know, I learned that what you do in you, meaning like yourself, is special no matter what. And there might be somebody that wants to be more informed about that. So you got to take pride in what you're doing. Absolutely. So I think I learned on my way out here, heading from Mound, west side of Lake Minnetonka, out to Uptown, it made me appreciate what I do a little bit more. So I learned that today.
Right on. That's a hell of a what did you learn. Thank you, Josh. I really do appreciate all the time you've given us. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Look forward to next time.
That's a wrap. Josh Letty, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were my boss. Now you're a close friend. I'm looking forward to the next time you come on the Back Pocket Podcast.
Absolutely. Not only is he a close friend, he is a recurring guest. Cannot wait to come back, have him come back and talk about his crazy path in neuromuscular therapy.
Yeah, I think something along those lines. Yeah. That's bananas.
Unbelievable.
Like, his body went through the ringer, and then he's like, I just want to clean up beaches. And he just still full send on that.
Yeah. I mean, when he said like, yeah, I really had to stop cleaning beaches. I took it was like with a grain of salt, like, oh yeah, like I wouldn't want to do that. But then when he was talking about all the serious injuries that he had, how he literally could not clean beaches, I was like, wow, good for him.
Nuts. I was my first time really getting to know him too. Mm-hmm. And I truly appreciated every second, because at times I really, you know, when you have a new guest on, anyone for that matter, like, you have to feel out the cards, test the personality, mm-hmm. find the right questions, be able to play the field. And that was fun with Josh, because I really did not know who he was. And once you found out it just the Minnesotan roots, I loved it. We thrived in that conversation, I think.
We thrived, and we're thriving now, dude. Welcome to the back end, marketing interns. For all of you that are new listeners, thank you for being here. Thank you for making it this far. We appreciate everyone that makes it this far to the back end. We're going to finish with an average quality, a what did you learn, and a feel-good story like we always do.
Second time we're doing it. Biggest improvement from 1 to 2. This is a new back end. We no longer have that that front end kind of portion. It's a combo back end now. Mm-hmm. So let's see how we improve.
Absolutely. And speaking of improvement, the party, man. That's our average quality this week, is planning the party. And you know what? We're having a bonus episode to talk about the party. And it's going to be funny to reflect on this conversation right now, not knowing what's on the other end of that.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about right now all the things that went into preparing for this party.
Mm-hmm.
However, next episode, when we talk about this party, we're going to talk about all the things that happened that we just didn't figure out that we needed to plan for.
Didn't even cross our minds.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Oops.
Whoops. All right, but what are we starting with, man? What do you got first?
So it starts with having Yam House come into the studio September 29th, literally 30 days before the event happened. And Declan goes straight up, you guys want to play at our Halloween party? And Seth looks down at his calendar, says we're free, and they were in. Lawrence was like, absolutely, we can make this happen. And then I was like kind of thrown back, because I didn't really process that this was the conversation that we're having. Like, we were in, like, I thought the meeting was about us helping them out with marketing. And then Declan drops that hammer within the first like I don't know, 60 seconds. And I was like, oh shit, I gotta be like locked in now. Like now I immediately went into like, all right, we gotta just figure everything out. Cause we didn't necessarily do all the prep work from our end to have everything figured out prior to talking to them.
Which, looking back on it, if I think that would have been a good idea. Maybe just to like see if we needed a sound permit, which we did. See if we need to notify the neighbors, which we did. And, you know, kind of go through all those logistics. Yeah, it would have been smart to maybe have that conversation before. But I guess when you explained, like, hey, this is a meeting to help Yam House out with marketing. I mean, having them play at our house is definitely in that realm. In that realm, I guess. But either way, man, it started with that. We then go into the sound permit. We purchase the sound permit, which is just crazy to think, like, you write to the city of Minneapolis, like, hey, we're throwing a glorified house party. There's a live band playing in the back. And, can we do it? And
will the noise be fine?
Yeah.
And we got it through.
Worked out totally fine.
So hopefully nothing went wrong with that in terms of like the police or neighbors complaining. We do have two policemen CC'd on a sound permit that are just totally in our back pockets for this party.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome. They can come over, have a good time with us. No questions asked. Mm-hmm. And then how about this? Notifying the neighbors. That was a hilarious, hilarious time because, you know, this is a house. I mean, it's five guys in a house. We each have a room. It's a home. We all live together. And our neighbor. So same thing.
And our neighbors, when we're facing our house, the neighbor's to the right. Same thing.
Same thing.
And to detail, like, to our marketing in terms of what our block looks like, it's nothing. No, there's no more homes. It's literally just two homes on the block.
It's two homes, and it's oversized houses that are all individually leased condos.
Blows my mind.
And we had no idea because on the outside, it just looks like a house. It's like, oh, Larry lives there. You know, no big deal.
They all look like family homes. And we go out there ready to hand out our flyers, our notes, and saying, hey, if you guys have any problems, if you guys want to come to the party, here's a little list of like what's going on.
Yeah, just bringing a bunch of business cards thinking like we're going to be handing them out. No, didn't hand up a single one. And we realized, okay, let's save all the apartments for last. Well, turns out every place is a glorified apartment or an actual apartment. So then we just went strictly from notification to market this thing. And so we started plastering our letters like everywhere, dude. It was unbelievable.
I think it worked. Hopefully no neighbors had any issues. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it. We got to talk to the most important one, which is the home to the right of us. And they were all for it.
They're all for it. They're having their own party, turns out. So good for them. And then, the anxiety, like, just speaking in the current moment, like now, the anxiety of like worrying, or not worrying about, but just like always kind of on your toes about preparation of like, okay, who's buying tickets or who's coming, who's not coming. I texted like 50 freaking people this week.
Right? Just to say, are you coming? Or are you interested?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure like the people that are listening to this, like, oh, yeah, I got a text from Andrew or Declan. It's like, yeah, we literally texted every single person.
It's bananas. And hey, so far, as of recording this on October 25th, a Thursday night,
Thursday night.
I think we got a solid number. We don't need necessarily the influx of like a last minute push, but it'd be nice.
It'd be nice.
We'd take it.
Yeah, we wouldn't say no.
Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I think the cost of this party was the biggest anxiety. Like, how much of our own money might be going into this? Mm-hmm. Will there be a balanced, like, will we come out even? Will we make some profit? That's the anxiety part, because money always lies in that factor. Like, that's always on your, that's always on the forefront of your mind.
Yeah.
But beyond that,
Bauhaus, dude, forgot about that part.
That's
too.
Just like that, making sure everyone like enjoys the party. And I think Bauhaus really set the tone of like, this is a legit party. Like, Yam House did it early, right away. Like, we're having a band play in our backyard, and then boom, a weekend we say we have a beer sponsor.
Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. And it was so funny getting that sponsor, because Andrew and I were walking to the liquor store probably 3 weeks ago, and we went to the local liquor store just asking for a quote on kegs to see how much we'd have to pay for them. And literally on our way out, we got an email from Mike from Bauhaus, one of the co-founders, and it was a subject in the email saying, I love your show. And in the email, he was just basically like, hey, I heard your podcast, would love to come on the show or like bring some value in any way I can. So we schedule him. He comes in the next week.
We have this grand plan to figure out, like, to pitch him, like, you want to sponsor our
learning party. From the time before, like, okay,
we didn't plan anything out before we asked Yam House to play at our house. All right, let's really freaking dice this up, chop this up, figure out how we're going to convince this guy or sell this guy on sponsoring our party. Mm-hmm. So he comes in the studio. We're getting ready to record. You know, we're thinking of pitching this idea to him after the interview, after we've warmed him up with Back Pocket Spirits. And
before it even began.
Yeah, before it even began, dude. He had mentioned, did he mention sponsorships or what did he exactly say?
I gave him the marketing intern average beer guy.
That's right.
Koozie.
That's right.
The last clean one that we had that was going to go to Dave Meltzer. Sorry, Dave Meltzer, you canceled the party. We found another person that we saw value in.
Yeah.
And so we gave him the koozie and we told him how like that party funded our marketing for the next 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh sweet, like next time you guys have a party, like let us know if like we could sponsor you guys. And I was like, I was gonna tell you like post this conversation, we'd love to have you sponsor our party in 2 weeks in our backyard. And he's like, oh for sure, like I got some kegs that would totally be for this crowd. And we're like, sweet.
All right, sweet. Well, we'll touch on this after the interview, but thank you. Yeah. Like, dude, locked it in right away. Like, okay, sweet. And then even after that, I was still, like, kind of in disbelief. Like, okay, when do I tell people this is sponsored by Bauhaus? Cause stuff like, because, I mean, it was a verbal thing, and he was really kind of off the cuff, like, really caught us off guard.
Yeah.
But then he texts us, like, that night, and he was like, hey, I think we should go kegs. I don't think you guys should have aluminum cans all over your house, blah, blah, blah. And then really it was just smooth sailing from then.
Like, it's incredible.
Unbelievable.
Thank you, Mike. Really do appreciate that. But yeah, the overall, the party planning is hard, but it was super enjoyable. Like trying to figure this out off the cuff, true John and Sarah off the cuff podcast, go to iTunes, subscribe, give them a 5-star review.
There you go.
And it was hard, but I enjoyed every second of it for sure.
I did too, man. And I think I'm always thinking about like the next thing and like I'm thinking about how we could get better.
Maybe pick a day when it's warm.
Yeah, maybe pick a day when it's warm and you're not worried about the rain. Because
the rain could screw everything.
The rain could screw us and have us all go inside. But, like, we have a plan for that, too. So it wasn't – not the end of the world there. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, just maybe if it's warm outside, that takes the stress out of that. And then
– well, you'll hear on this next upcoming podcast our reflection on the failures.
You know what?
But right now we're in a good spirits. Let's just ride it out.
Yeah, this is great. We're super excited. Like, this party's going to be super dope. You know, like, stoked.
Yo, we crushed it.
We crushed it, dude. We crushed it. Sorry.
So whether we did or not, that's our average quality. That's the unknown.
Yeah,
the planning unknown. Aspect was unknown. We figured it out. Everything's an average at that point. But
dude, absolutely.
Should we transition?
Yeah, great party.
Great
Thanks
party.
For everyone that came.
Nailed it.
By the way, take our survey. We need you guys to, in the show notes, when you guys finish up this episode, we have a survey that Andrew and I put together to kind of just better understand our audience. We want to take this content to the moon, right? We want to make the best content for you guys. And the best way to do that is through a survey. So if you guys could just take, I think it takes like 5 minutes. Fill it out, send it to other marketing interns.
Is there any free response in there?
Yes, there's free response, and it is
one question, right?
Yeah, it's feedback for the back pocket. Mm-hmm. If you respond in there with some legit feedback, we will read all of our feedback throughout the next whatever episodes on our show.
And
we
want
to get it out there.
Exactly, and the one that we like the most may win a back pocket t-shirt.
Absolutely, something to think about there. And we'll follow up on that 100% too. Yeah. So definitely fill out that survey in the show notes. What did you learn, Andrew?
This week I learned, okay, so this is the true back end where I really lock in how a finisher would lock into the back end.
Okay. It's
the 18th hole.
Right on. You got your master's hat on.
Exactly. We've done this for now for 73 podcasts with a back end. What did I learn this week? It goes back to where I am today is working at United Healthcare again. And the art of right angles everywhere in an office room. Everything's a right angle. And dude, it's kind of sad. Like nature and everything outside of that building, there's no right angles. But in this building, everything's a right angle.
Everything's squared off, bro.
Everything's squared off. Everything's fine-tuned. Everything's processed. Everything is very regimented. It's cut, cornered. It's been through the optimization of efficiency, right angled. It's kind of nutty, man.
We should, when we have an office, like a back pocket office, which is everything's rounded corners.
Rounded everything, dude.
No such thing as a right angle.
Even tables, man.
Even tables.
Like this table, the C-clamps will continue to fail because no right
angle. Yeah, because there is no right angle here. That's hilarious.
That's what
good way to be good century acuity there.
Thank you.
Just kind of recognizing that.
nature does not have a lot of right angles compared to the corporate life. So something to think about there.
There's a lot of underlining meaning to that.
Yeah.
That's for you marketing interns, our listeners. Again, our marketing interns are our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I want to continue to repeat it.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Everyone knows for the end of time can interpret it any way they want.
Okay.
But sweet, Declan, man, what did you learn this week?
Dude, I learned that potluck dinners are the best kind of dinners in the world. You know why?
Why?
Because everyone is bringing something to the table, dude. When you go to a potluck dinner, you're bringing something that you whatever's best in your back pocket, whatever kind of recipe you can pull out of there to throw on that table for everyone to enjoy, you're going
to
do
it. You're trying to impress.
Absolutely. Then you got Jody. She's going to bring her bean dip. You got Kevin and his flame ribs. You got Joanne. She's got her homemade brownies. So damn good, right? Everyone's bringing something. The whole dinner is going to be great. And it all comes back to bringing value, dude. I love the potluck dinners because everybody's bringing value. Everybody's contributing to the pot. And it's just an absolute blast. So how do you do that? Like, how do you look into that mindset, I guess? And like I said, it's all about bringing value and always focusing on that. Not necessarily what that person is bringing to the dinner table, but what you're bringing to the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is like the essence of networking and collaboration. Everything that I do nowadays, I just look to give as much as I can give to someone.
Dude, phenomenal. Potluck dinners, man.
The
ability to metaphorically put that into everything. Phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, Brandon Polizuk, Social Butterfly, he had alluded to potluck dinners on the Stationary Astronaut podcast.
Atta
so
boy.
It really sparked my interest there. So that's what I learned this week.
Great.
Good time stuff. If you want to see the full post, I posted on LinkedIn, which is like, if you go on LinkedIn and watch us interact on LinkedIn, it's a totally different environment.
Talk about nutty.
Right angles. Dude, a lot of right angles on LinkedIn.
We are the rounded humans in there.
Yeah.
Just rolling.
We're the circle
just
in the square.
Just consistently rolling. Yeah.
Oh,
putting a peg in a square hole or something, whatever that saying is.
calling the kettle black, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. Feel good story, dude.
Feel good
story. How are we feeling today?
Feeling great. You know, last week I was pissed. You guys heard it here first.
You were so mad.
I think the growth from 1 to 2 is better. I'm becoming a little bit more mentally in tune with what it takes to be a back-end aficionado. And I think we're doing so well. We're doing well right now. So marketing interns, our listeners, give us some more feedback on that. We'd love it. Go to iTunes. Give us a 5-star review if you think we earned it, and maybe a review. I feel like we haven't asked you guys to do that in a while. So.
I know. Oh, yeah. I like listening to all the old podcasts. Holy cow. All we did was ask people to give us 5-star reviews.
Yeah.
And they help.
They help a lot.
Yeah.
We love them. Feel good story. Goes back to the whole party, man. Thank you to every single person that helped us have the party and that came to the party. You guys were super impactful and super helpful. We truly appreciated the value you gave to us. So. Mm-hmm. That made me feel good, and I hope it makes everyone else feel good.
Absolutely. I would also like to touch on, reflecting on the whole Sober October movement. That was a crazy journey.
Yeah.
It's over. And looking forward now to Movember. The boys are growing their stashes out, dude. And these hitters are going to be a little crazy. Andrew's a little more than mine, but...
So are you going to leave what you have now straight into November? Or are you going to restart?
No, I'm leaving it. I went no shave October to get this thing to where it is, and then I'm gonna shave everything around it
and just have Movember.
And just have the Movember, because I don't know how much better is this gonna get much better, or is it just not full enough to really?
It's gonna be itchy, man.
Yeah.
Whew. Mentally prepare for it. Life's itchy, dude. There's gonna be a lot of parts where you're just being like, I don't know, dude.
Just itching stuff, because you know life's always itching, bro.
Always itching, whether it's excitement or whether it's nerves. You get a little sweaty, you get a little itchy.
Yeah, like get a little anxious, get a little itchy, dude. You know, that's life, man. But I will say that's a great finish to the podcast. Next week, dude, we got a huge guest.
Been waiting to get him on for a long time. Gino.
Gina, how do you spell it? Say his last name.
Gino Valli. I don't know. I made that up. But he was came into my marketing class fall semester of senior year. And just gave a little spiel about like his class and to the underclassmen, like take his class in the future. Clearly, I couldn't take it anymore because I was about to graduate. But he spoke to me and that was in those few moments. And then just he's been like everywhere since then. And Declan had some interaction with him. So I was like, dude, we saw you at Tommy Johnny. We had Davis run into you. and say, hey, you need to come on the back pocket. You came on. It was phenomenal. Thank you, Gino. Let's get after podcast 74.
74, yep.
But it's season 2, episode 39.
Episode 39 featuring Gino, St. Thomas professor, marketing guy, was part of the Super Bowl
website design. Website design. He was the lead.
The guy's a genius. He's in a band, too. Just, hey, next week, man. Mm-hmm. Next week, you got to be there. 5 a.m. next Monday. See you then. Love you guys. Take care.
Take care.